Welcome to Akhotra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI.
Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're diving into a real classic, a novel that's just packed with history, psychology, everything, really.
We absolutely are. We're tackling Stendhal's monumental 1830 work, The Red and the Black, and that subtitle he gave it, The Chronicle of the 19th Century, well, it tells you a lot.
It really does.
It's not just a plot. It's a mirror held up to France during a really turbulent time. You've got the echoes of Napoleon, the shift to the Bourbon Restoration.
Right.
And our goal today is to really unpack the journey of his protagonist, Julien Sorel. He's this iconic figure, and we want to explore how his fierce ambition just crashes against the society he's in.
Oh, it's such a brilliant pit. You immediately sense this intense inner conflict in Julien, this burning ambition, this kind of passionate heart.
Yeah.
But he's stuck navigating a world that feels, well, fake, doesn't it?
Hypocrisy is definitely the name of the game in his world.
Yeah, where everything's about climbing the ladder, putting on a show, it really makes you ask that question right from the start. Can real talent, real merit, actually win out in a system built to keep the privilege?
Well,
privileged.
That's the central question, isn't it?
Okay, let's get into it.
First, maybe a bit about Stendhal himself.
Mm.
Henri Ballo, his real name, born 1783. He's considered a pioneer of psychological realism.
And his own life saw so much change.
Absolutely. The Revolution, Napoleon's rise and fall, the Restoration, he lived through it all. And that experience, that upheaval, it really shaped his writing, his focus on the individual trying to make their way against these huge social currents.
Mm.
He was fascinated by what he called the pursuit of happiness, but not in a simple way. More the complex psychology behind ambition, love, even, you know, how we deceive ourselves. His characters are flawed, deeply human.
And that title, The Red and the Black, so striking. You mentioned the source is really digging into this.
They do. The red, that's Napoleon's era, the military glory, the passion, maybe even revolution. Like the soldier's uniform.
Yep.
And the black, that's the clergy, the conservative power that came after Napoleon, the priest's cassock. It represents the Restoration Society.
So it's the core tension right there in the title.
Exactly. Ambition versus constraint. Idealism versus the cold reality of society. It's a visual shorthand for the limited choices facing someone like Julien.
Okay, so that sets the stage. Where does Julien Sorel actually start?
We meet him in provincial France, the 1820s. He's from a very humble background. His father's a carpenter. But Julien himself, he's incredibly bright.
Right, the photographic memory, memorizing the Bible in Latin.
Exactly. Prodigious intellect and this just all-consuming ambition. But here's his problem. He's born with this drive, this almost Napoleonic sense of destiny.
But the world's moved on.
Precisely. Military glory isn't really an option anymore, and moving up the social ladder seems almost impossible if you weren't born into it.
So the conflict is clear. Can his talent and drive break through those class barriers? Especially in a society that seems so hypocritical.
That's the crux of it. Stendhal paints this picture of him in Verrières, his hometown. His family almost despises him because he loves books, not carpentry.
And he secretly worships Napoleon.
Yes. Sees him as proof that sheer will and genius can triumph. But he's also pragmatic, cunning even. He figures out quickly that the church, the black, is the new way to get ahead in this Restoration era.
So he plays the part.
He plays the part beautifully. Adopts this pious act, memorizes scripture, looks humble,
mm-hmm.
all while hiding Napoleon's memoirs under his bed.
Wow. Calculated.
Very. Ambition is his driving force, and he sees hypocrisy and even seduction as tools, as weapons in his climb.
And this leads him to his first big move, right? The Renal household.
Yes, his first campaign, as he almost thinks of it. He gets hired as a tutor for the children of Monsieur de Renal, the town's mayor.
And immediately sets his sights on Madame de Renal.
He does. But initially, it's not about love or even desire, really. He sees seducing her as a kind of duty, a way to prove himself, to score a point against the elite he resents.
Like a conquest.
Exactly. It's a strategic move. But then the unexpected happens. This cold calculation starts to, melts away.
Genuine feelings get involved.
Deep, genuine passion develops on both sides. It completely throws Julien's cynical plans into disarray. Of course, the affair doesn't stay secret.
Anonymous letters.
Yes, the classic provincial gossip null. It forces Julien to leave Verrières to avoid a huge scandal, mostly to protect her reputation.
And Madame de Renal's side of this is fascinating, too.
It really is. Stendhal portrays her as quite sheltered, conventional, almost naive at first. But this affair awakens her to this profound, pure love.
Her feelings seem so authentic.
Completely authentic.
Yeah.
Which is such a stark contrast to Julian's initial calculations. It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? Can real love blossom if one person starts out just using the other?
That's a deep question.
After fleeing Verrières, Julian ends up at the Besançon Seminary. A whole different world.
More hypocrisy.
Oh, definitely. Ecclesiastical politics, piety as performance. It's rampant. Julian has to learn to be even more hypocritical just to survive there.
Doesn't sound appealing.
Not really, but interestingly, he does find a genuine mentor, the Abbé Pirard. A truly virtuous man.
So even there's some good.
Yes, it shows that integrity can exist even in corrupt systems. Maybe gives Julian a glimpse of something real.
Okay, so after the seminary, Paris calls.
Paris calls. Through Abbé Pirard's connections, he lands a position as secretary to the Marquis de La Mole. A very powerful aristocrat.
So he's in the big leagues now.
Right into the heart of power, or what seems like it. He's navigating this sophisticated, glamorous, but often morally empty Parisian high society.
And that's where he meets Mathilde.
Mathilde de La Mole, the Marquis's daughter. She's proud, incredibly intelligent, sharp-witted, but also deeply bored with her aristocratic life.
Looking for excitement.
Exactly. And Julien, with his intensity, his sort of dangerous plebeian energy, fascinates her. She sees him almost as a character from her romantic novels, a real-life hero.
So not quite the same connection as with Madame de Rênal.
Not at all. Their relationship is described as this volatile chess match. It's all about power, pride, manipulation. Very intellectualized.
A battle of wits.
Absolutely. He even, at one point, deliberately seduces another woman just to provoke Mathilde's jealousy.
Does it work?
Astonishingly, yes.
Uh-huh.
It's a cold, calculated move, and it succeeds completely, much to his own sort of cynical surprise.
It really highlights the difference between the two women, doesn't it?
Massively.
Yeah.
The sources really draw this out. Mathilde's head love, born from intellect, pride, a fascination with the idea of Julien versus Madame de Rênal's pure heart love.
One loves the concept, the other loves the person.
You could say that. Mathilde is drawn to his rebellion, his difference. Mm. Madame de Rênal loves him for who he fundamentally is, flaws and all.
And the Marquis himself, he seems complicated.
He is. He's a staunch royalist, believes firmly in the old order. Yet he can't help but be intrigued, even impressed, by Julien's obvious talent and intelligence.
Despite the class difference.
Despite the huge class difference. Which leads to that really shocking moment. His decision to actually ennoble Julien, give him a title, and allow him to marry Mathilde when she becomes pregnant.
Wow, that's huge.
It really is. It shows the contradictions within that rigid society. How even the strongest rules can sometimes bend for perceived individual merit. Or perhaps for family reasons, however grudgingly. A crack in the system.
So Julien's made it. He's achieved everything.
It certainly looks that way. Mathilde's pregnant, the Marquis has accepted him, he gets a military commission, a noble title, Chevalier Julien Sorel de la Vernay. It's the absolute peak, every ambition realized.
You just know something has to go wrong.
And it does, dramatically. The twist of fate arrives in the form of a letter.
From Madame de Rênal.
Yes. Apparently under pressure from her confessor, she writes to the Marquis, and it's a devastating letter, portraying Julien as a cold, manipulative seducer who uses women to climb the social ladder.
Oh, no. That destroys everything.
Completely shatters his world. His future evaporates in an instant, and Julien, he snaps.
He loses that calculation.
And what Stendhal presents as a pure, uncalculated act of wounded pride, maybe despair, raw passion, he rides back to Verrières.
And does the unthinkable.
He walks into the church during Mass, and shoots Madame de Rênal.
That moment is just shattering.
It's the climax, absolutely. It's this visceral explosion of authentic emotion, anger, betrayal, pride, completely destroying the careful facade he's built over years.
Emotion finally wins over calculation.
In the most tragic way possible.
Yeah.
His trial is the next key sequence. And he doesn't try to defend himself, not really.
He uses it as a platform.
He does. He sheds all the hypocrisy. He basically condemns the class system that he feels judged him from the start. Famously declares himself a peasant who has rebelled.
Gentlemen of the jury, I have not the honor of belonging to your class.
That line. It's pure defiance. He almost welcomes the death sentence as the inevitable vengeance of the privileged class he challenged.
A strange kind of victory for him, maybe. Being authentic at the end.
Perhaps. And in those final days in prison, Stendhal gives him this profound sense of clarity. He reconciles with Madame de Rênal, who actually survives the shooting initially.
And he realizes.
He realizes her love, that simple, pure love, was the only truly authentic and happy experience he ever had. A devastating epiphany right at the end.
Understanding what really mattered, but only when it's too late.
Exactly. He sees she loved him for himself, not for his potential or his ambitions. She loved me for what I am, not for what I might become.
So powerful. Let's talk about the big themes Stendhal is exploring here. Ambition and class seem huge.
Absolutely central. The novel is just a scathing critique of Restoration France, this society where your birth basically determined your fate, regardless of talent.
Yeah.
Julian's whole story shows how ambition, while it can drive you, can also twist you, force you into hypocrisy just to survive.
And his ambition is kind of what destroys him in the end.
It really is. It's ironic. That quote from Stendhal often gets mentioned. The only way to get along in this world is to rise above it. And the only way to rise above it is to despise it.
Wow. Cynical.
Deeply cynical. And you see Julian trying to live by that. But ultimately, his own passions betray that cold philosophy. It's not just about ambition itself, but the performance of ambition when real paths are blocked.
The masks he has to wear.
Constantly. It's a commentary on how society can force you to compromise your true self just to get anywhere.
And the theme of love, that contrast between Madame de Renal and Mathilde is so stark. Passion versus pride.
Yes, the selfless heart love versus the intellectual prideful head love. It mirrors Julian's own internal battle between his feelings and his calculations, his head and his heart.
Which Stendhal lets us see through his psychological realism, right? The internal monologues.
Groundbreaking for the time. He takes you right inside Julian's head. You see his justifications, his self-deceptions. He rationalizes seduction as a duty. It reveals the complex, often contradictory ways we think.
It makes the characters feel so real, so messy.
Exactly. It's not just watching actions. You're experiencing the internal conflict. That famous Stendhal quote, "A novel is a mirror carried along a high road," fits perfectly. He reflects society's surface, but also delves deep into the individual mind.
And symbolism, too. Obviously red and black, but you mentioned ladders.
Yes, ladders appear frequently, symbolizing that relentless social climbing. And the dramatic irony throughout Julian thinks he's in control, manipulating everything, but his emotions are always simmering just beneath the surface, ready to erupt.
All this complexity leads to what you called tragic ambiguity. We feel for him, but we're also frustrated by him.
Precisely. He's not easily labeled a hero or a villain. He's a product of his time,
yeah.
Shaped by these impossible social pressures, making choices that are both understandable and self-destructive.
The tragedy is partly the waste, isn't it? All that talent, that fire.
Immense waste. Could he have been different in a different society? That's the question Stendhal leaves hanging. It still resonates, you know. Well, think about the pressure today. Ambition, career advancement versus being authentic. How much do we curate our own image, our personal brand?
That's a very modern connection. Are we all performing a bit like Julian?
It's a provocative thought. How much is real? How much is strategy? Julian's struggle feels surprisingly familiar in that sense.
And that feeling of waste you mentioned really hits hard. His intelligence, his passion, it all gets channeled into this ultimately destructive path because society offered him no honest way forward.
It makes the critique of that society incredibly sharp, and it leaves you with that enduring question. Is it even possible to achieve success in the world and stay true to yourself, maintain personal happiness, or does the system inevitably corrupt?
A tough question with no easy answer.
The red and the black is just timeless because it blends that deep psychological insight with such sharp social commentary. It speaks to struggles that are still fundamentally human.
It really forces you to look at yourself and the world around you and ask about the masks we wear, the price of success, and what authenticity even means anymore.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.